Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Peyto's third quarter 2017 financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the floor over to President and CEO, Darren Gee. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, Karen. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks to everybody for tuning in to Peyto's third quarter 2017 results conference call. Before we get started today, I would like to remind everybody that all statements made by the company during this call are subject to the forward-looking disclaimer and advisory that we set forth in the company's news release that was issued yesterday. In the room with me today, we've got all of Peyto's management team. We've got Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our Chief Financial Officer, JP Lachance, our VP Exploitation, Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, Lee Curran, he's our VP of Drilling and Completions, he's here, Todd Burdick, our VP Production, and Tim Louie, our VP of Land. We got the whole team here today. Before I get started, maybe with some general comments about the quarter, I would like to recognize the efforts of the entire Peyto team, including all of our field personnel for this past quarter. We not only had, I think, a record quarter of drilling activity, but we had to deal with some unprecedented volatility in natural gas prices. We've never seen daily natural gas prices that went negative before, so that required our production and marketing staff to be very nimble and responsive so that we weren't selling gas into negative prices, and they all did a great job. We still managed to achieve record production by a few hundred BOEs a day anyway, and despite having to shut in an average of about 3,500 BOEs for the whole quarter. We still posted one of the largest quarterly earnings numbers that we've had in the last 3 years. Great job by all, and on behalf of all the Peyto shareholders, I just want to say thank you to the entire Peyto team for that effort. Now, I wanted just to start this morning with some general comments before we get into some specifics about the quarter and maybe take some questions from those callers listening in. First off, I can say we're very glad to be through Q3 and into the winter, not just because I'm a big skier, but out west here, winter has definitely started early, but more so because Alberta natural gas prices corrected quite rapidly as soon as the cold weather hit and popped right back up to where they should be. During the third quarter, however, AECO daily prices ranged from a high of 2.50 dollars per gigajoule down to a low of -2.20 dollars. As I mentioned, that's just massive swings, and we've never seen that before. Thankfully, we had more than 90% of our gas actually committed to the monthly price, which is a lot more stable than that, and we had hedged more than 90% of that monthly commitment to fixed price swaps. So really, that only left us with around 8% of our gas exposed to the AECO daily price. And although we had to watch that 8% closely every day as the price moved around, we did take advantage on some days even and shut in more of our gas, not just the 8%, but some of our monthly hedge volumes, in fact, and we bought a little gas at negative prices, so we in effect got paid to take other people's gas. And then we put that towards our monthly price. So we made a little profit those days without actually incurring any costs or using up any of our reserves, so that was nice. But those were only a few days in the quarter that we were able to really do that. As I mentioned, though, even after all that, we still had about 3,500 BOEs a day shut in for the entire quarter just because prices were so weak. While all that was going on, we were still very busy in the field drilling away. We drilled 44 wells in this quarter, making it one of the very busiest. I think our record was 45 up until this point. And we brought on 42 wells, which really helped vault our current production up to that 115,000 BOE a day level. As we mentioned in the press release, we still have more work to do this year in the fourth quarter. We've still got another almost 6 weeks of drilling, completion, and tie-in activity, and that should potentially take our production up to that 120 level, hopefully by the end of the year. So still on track to reach that original exit target that we were talking about this time last year and doing it for a lot less capital than what we had forecast. Cash costs in the quarter were very good, down at that 76-cent level. We'd still like to maybe chip a few pennies off of that and get down to our record low of 72 cents that we posted last year, but still extremely good cash costs, industry-leading, and going forward, we'll see what the guys can do in terms of compressing some of that cost down even more. Of course, it was those industry-leading cash costs that allowed us to turn these pretty weak commodity prices that we saw in the quarter into, I think, very competitive cash netbacks at around $14.85 a BOE. That cash netback is very similar to what most of the extremely liquid-rich gas producers are posting this quarter and even some of the oil producers. So pretty good netback from a mostly gas producer. Going even further down the income statement to the most important number, and that is the profits. We posted a very tidy $45 million in earnings this quarter, which is not quite up to the dividend level of 54, but it does give us the confidence that with the improved commodity prices for this winter that we're already seeing and production north of that 115 level, we're going to be covering the dividend with earnings, especially over the next couple of quarters. But before we open maybe the call up to those listening in, I did want to engage some of the Peyto management team in some discussion about the future outlook and the hopes that we can provide some additional color on the quarter. So maybe let's start with Lee Kern, our VP of Drilling and Completions. Lee, our assumption for 2018 is that our activity levels and service costs for drilling and completions are going to remain basically at this current level. Maybe you could tell us just what you're hearing from suppliers and other active drillers in the industry about that, their activity levels. We've seen a lot of press releases just out this week on people's 2018 program. Is it a safe assumption to assume that costs are going to stay flat? And maybe further to that, do we have any plans to try and improve our efficiencies and lower costs even further?
Sure, Darren. Despite current weather and improved access conditions throughout the province, active rig counts haven't really wavered from that 200 or so level. We're seeing reduced capital programs being released this week from several other active operators, and that really comes to us as no big surprise given forecasted strip pricing. So with that, we're certainly forecasting service pricing to remain flat throughout the remainder of 2017 and into 2018. The volatility and occasions of negative day price you spoke to earlier is starting to be heard and perhaps better understood throughout the service sector. It was a little bit unknown through that sector of the industry for a long period of time. With realization that conditions for increased service costs simply aren't supported at this time. In fact, we've renegotiated recently some slightly reduced pricing on a few services, and that included casing and directional services, and that'll have a positive effect towards our well cost reductions. Although the fracturing sector hasn't reduced pricing, we have had expressions of interest, and that included some crew availability from a few providers that we have not historically utilized. So perhaps that's an indication that supply is loosening up and we're optimistic that perhaps more competitive pricing may soon be presented. Now, on the optimization front, we've always got a few things cooking, and I'll mention a few of those, but I'm going to reserve a few, keep a few of those cards close to my chest. Our soon-to-be-developed Whitehorse field appears to have thinner and more stable thinner coals and more stable build sections, and thus those tend to be less problematic. And with that, we're cautiously planning an implementation of a slim hole monobore design. Now, that'll make a significant reduction in our drill costs in that area. So we're early in our development stage there, and we're going to approach this in a controlled fashion as we've just recently activated our single rig in Whitehorse. So stay tuned on that. Those numbers could be upwards of, 10 to 15% of our current drill costs on a per well basis. We've continued our efforts on optimization of bit and directional BHA designs in the Brazos, and with that, we've had a number of very long single runs encompassing our entire build and lateral sections, a few of those upwards of 3,000 meters in a single run. Additionally, our development planning, and that includes well placements in our newly activated Whitehorse and Chambers areas, are being significantly front-end loaded as compared to perhaps our steady-state Sundance program. That allows us to lay out our well locations well in advance for better use of pad drilling techniques and potentially longer laterals as well. So I guess in summary, unless we see a market increase in activity, which at this point can really only be driven by significantly improved oil and gas prices, maintaining a flat to potentially slightly decreased well cost structure is a very reasonable expectation.
Okay, perfect. Okay, well then that leads into this next question I had for JP Lachance, our VP of Exploitation. JP, we mentioned in the release that our capital program for 17 is on track to deliver around 50,000 BOEs a day of new, and so that translates into a capital efficiency of about that 10.5, 10.6 number. I guess going further, that's just a bit of a rule of thumb. What would that translate into in terms of expected returns? And if Lee can provide us with at least flat, if not downward, directional cost structure, you know, what do the returns look like for the 2018 type wells that we currently have in that first half drilling program?
Yes, Darren, you know, as part of the process for next year's capital program, we take stock of the results this year to the extent that they're a proxy for what we can expect to deliver next year. You know, in that analysis, we include the actual costs we spent, as always, and the prices we realized without the hedge gains. And we run that production trend against the current strip for future future cash flows. As in any year, we've got a range of results across our species, but some of our best results have come from the Notikewin wells, particularly in Brazeau, where even with extra costs to delineate the play with strat holes, we're predicting many wells with returns over 30% on a full cycle basis, even under the current strip. The liquid content of these wells can be over 20 barrels a million, so you know that coupled with high gas deliverability makes for some impressive returns. You know, elsewhere in Whitehorse, we're pleased with the results of that program thus far, with predicted returns closer to 25% on the strip, which is also bolstered by higher liquid yields and cheaper costs on average. Up in Sundance, we've had some good results in our Notikewin and good results in our Notikewin and flare wells, where cost management is key to obtaining the returns around 20% in this price environment. So when we compare this year's program against last year's program on the same deck, we get more or less the same result, which speaks to the consistency of our program. Now, looking forward into 2018, we'll attempt to follow up on these results and high-grade our best wells. We'll focus on the Notikewin, the Wilrich in areas where the costs are cheaper and or are prone to more liquids, like Whitehorse. You know, Lee just alluded to the fact that he's got some aces up his sleeve there as well. We will also target select flares and maybe even some cardiums where the gas rates aren't high, but they've got higher liquid content and are cheaper to drill. But by design, this combined program in the first half of 2018 is designed to yield a 20% full cycle rate of return under the current strip.
Okay, good. Which is current strip's pretty weak, so those are some pretty good returns. Maybe turning to Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration. Dave, we mentioned in our press release that we're having some particularly good results with our Brazeau Notikewin play. Any chance you could provide a little more color without giving away too much on this? And maybe some other commentary on other inventory at Brazeau we might be chasing?
Darren, we did have some extra good Notikewins up at West Braz. We brought two wells on production in the 20 million a day range, and we're about to bring a third well on in that same league. In Q4, we've got four more wells to drill on that same West Braz trend, and these could really help give us a strong finish for 2017 to coincide with higher winter gas pricing. In general, our experience with Notikewin inventory is that it's constantly evolved. Back in 2009, up at Sundance, where we first started to drill horizontals into these Notikewin channels, we thought that the play had already been mostly developed by vertical wells. But here we are 8 years later in 2017, and we've now drilled 127 Notikewin horizontals in Greater Sundance. And in fact, our 2017 Sundance Notikewin program will total 22 wells by year end, and that's one of our bigger Notikewin years up at Sundance. The Sundance Notikewin I guess you could say it's been the gift that's kept on giving for us up there. Down at Braz, we now have over 190 sections of land covered by 7 different 3D seismic surveys. Now, we've tuned up just 3 of these 3Ds to our new specs so far, so it's premature to estimate the Braz zone out of Q inventory, but we should have a good 2 years of opportunities, and if our experience at Brazo is similar to up at Sundance, then the more we drill, the more potential we should discover. To round out Q4 at Brazo, we'll also be drilling another 3 nauticulans down at East Braz and 2 nauticulans in the South Braz area that we call Jackfish, plus a couple of Polaires. Our most recent Q3 middle Polaire at Braz was our best to date, and we'll be drilling some more of these in 2018. In Southeast Brazo, in an area we call Chambers, we're drilling 3 new Wilrich wells, which are a continuation of the Wilrich trend we've drilled up at North Braz. We've mapped about 65 Wilrich locations on this trend, and in combination with the 75 Wilrich locations we have up at Whitehorse, we've added a nice 140 Wilrich inventory bump in a play that's been really, really good to us.
Awesome. So lots of new inventory coming. It's great. Maybe let's turn to production. Let's talk to Todd Burdick, our VP production. Todd, we mentioned in the release that we turned on our deep cut at Old Man. When did that happen, and can you provide us any color? Is that expensive to turn that thing on and off again, or can we react to volatile propane prices that quickly?
Yeah, for sure. excuse me. The deep cut started on September 6th, so near the end of the quarter, last month of the quarter. We had previously shut it in April of this year. This is the second time we've shut the plant down since 2016 due to low propane prices. This time around, we saw an increase in efficiencies in both the time to get the plant running and the cost to get it running. In total, it cost about $50,000 to get the plant up and running again. That includes labor, which is really just a pipe fitting crew and some scaffolding, but also the time, the lost revenue from a 4-hour shutdown where the cryo exchanger and cold skid are put back in service. If we need to shut the deep cut in again, we expect that cost to be about the same in that $50,000 range. Once the plant gets up and running, the process set points from the prior to the shutdown are input, and then it's really just 2 or 3 days of adjustments to optimize propane recovery back to that 70 to 75% level that we've seen historically.
Okay, good stuff. Maybe I'll finish off with Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. Scott, you mentioned me earlier this week that we're on track to lower our projected methane emissions going forward. So let's talk a little bit about our environmental stewardship and performance. I've bragged in the past we're the Mr. Clean of the oil patch. With much better verified methane emissions than the average producer out there. What's this target that we're headed for, and when do we get there?
Well, we certainly don't like emitting methane. We like to sell the stuff, and that's been our ambition all along. Just a couple points up front. I think we all know that the government's shooting for a 45% reduction in methane emissions as a whole for the province by 2025. And here shortly, we expect the Alberta Energy to release some guidelines on how they see this being implemented across the oil and gas sector. So we await that, but we haven't been waiting. 2 years ago, we did start taking action with respect to further quantifying our emissions and then addressing opportunities to reduce it. One of the biggest points is the emission of methane associated with chemical pumps at well sites, as well as controllers at well sites predominantly. So What we did here, just out of curiosity, was we looked at our forecast of decline on all of our existing wells, which have old style equipment, and we looked at the growth forecast associated with all the wells we're drilling from 2017 forward, which includes, and by the way, we're on all new wells, we are installing new gear, zero emission pumps, electric pumps, as well as low emission controllers. And as we see our production transition from the decline of old production and the growth of new production, we don't have to take any other action. We will achieve our 45% reduction by that 2025 time frame. But that doesn't mean that we're going to stop there. We have other ambitions with respect to other dimensions, fugitive emissions and what have you, and we hope to exceed, to beat that target on a time basis and to exceed it on a magnitude basis. So lots going on there, and I think we're well positioned to comply without, and the costs associated with this are insignificant in the scope of things. So looks good.
Awesome. Maybe just one more question before we flip it open to the callers. I mentioned we'd vaulted our current production up towards that 115 level, and we're headed towards 120 by end of year. Where do we sit with facilities and the infrastructure capability to handle all this growth?
We're sitting quite well. You know, it was nice to see this this price rally here in the last few weeks. It allowed us to test all this completed inventory that we've been turning on and shutting off, and as you stated, it's ramped our production up to that 115 level. And we've got in our key areas of activity right now, being principally Brazos and the Greater Sundance area, we've got about 68 million cubic feet of additional capacity at the relevant plants that we would be delivering that new production to. So about another 11,000 barrels a day. That should carry us through the end of this year quite nicely and into the first quarter of next year. And then we also have, and we've talked about this in the past, we've got a fair bit of equipment, plant and compression equipment that's been fabricated or near completely fabricated that we can deploy as we hit that, as we fill up that 11,000 exceed the 120,000 corporate production that we're shooting for here. So capacity to move the volumes over the rest of the year and poised to grow from there forward.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for that additional color, guys. Karen, maybe we can open up the call to any questions we have from listeners.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star followed by the number one key on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or if you'd like to remove your line from the queue, you may press the pound key. Again, if you do have a question, please press star then one at this time. And our first question comes from the line of Travis Wood with the National Bank of Canada. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I wanted to just touch on the broader market. This seems to be acting a lot like 2012, 2013, both from a macro gas sense, but then also from a Peyto, at least the equity performance sense. And through that time, you guys at that point started talking about land expiries and the opportunity that you see from the lower development. You already touched on lower activity, which could help from the capital cost perspective. But how are you thinking about, and do you see opportunity to consolidate existing lands through potential expiries from the lower activity levels? And are there, in addition to some of the plays that you've identified, are there other regions that you're starting to look at that could layer on incremental growth in a better market like we saw you do with Brazos?
Well, thanks for the question, Travis. The simple answer is, of course, that with the pullback in activity that we've seen people release for 2018, most of the big deep basin players anyway are looking at smaller amounts of activity, smaller spending, and we would pair that with a look at future expiries within the basin and suggest that there's a lot of potential land really coming up and not a lot of guys drilling to continue and hold the land that they have. So our expectation would be that there is some really good opportunities out there to potentially add to our our Whitehorse play, which is a bit in its infancy, and build on that, add to our Brazeau, which is really starting to pick up some steam, and maybe even pick and chip away at Sundance, which is, you know, a fairly a little bit more maturely developed area, but at the same time, you know, we've got such great infrastructure in there that we're the logical guy to even pick away at little bits and pieces and get that developed too. I think yesterday's land sale, we were doing more of that same work, and I think as we go forward, for sure, you know, there's a lot of large, in the past they've been U.S., type players that have held big positions in the Deep Basin. These days it's more of Canadian players, but at the same time they still don't have a lot of activity going on. And so I think we see quite a bit of land coming available for us. Maybe Tim or Dave, do you guys want to add some comment on that?
I'll just add some color here. For last year, through land sales and acquisitions, we added about 29,000 acres. Year-to-date, we've added about 54,000 acres. So we have taken advantage of expiries, acquisitions through the year. So as you can see, it's about 25,000 more acres that we've acquired this year versus last year.
And so going forward, I mean, this year was probably going to be even busier, more activity in 17 than there will be in 18, even more of an acceleration perhaps there. So yeah, you know, we're, as always, opportunistic, especially on the organic front, looking for places where we can build either new core areas or complement our existing ones with land deals. We're not a very successful acquirer of other people's production, generally because we have to use up most of the return we can generate in buying their barrels. So we like to build it ourselves and control it all ourselves right from the start. That's where the raw land opportunity really is a big potential for us, and we're liking the way the future is looking right now.
Okay. Thank you for the answer.
Yeah, thanks, Trev.
Thank you. And that concludes our question and answer session for today. I'd like to turn the floor back over to Darren G. for any additional comments.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening in. I appreciate this is an incredibly busy week. Lots of guys announcing today and yesterday and conference calls and stuff going on this morning. So for those that listened in, thanks for your time. And we'll be back to you with some fourth quarter results in the new year. We've got a strong finish to the end of this year. And then 2018, at least the winter anyway, is setting up to be pretty good pricing, and we'll have good production levels. But we're going to watch pretty closely what next summer pricing is going to do as it evolves over this winter, and that's going to dictate how aggressive we're going to get with the capital program going into fall of 2018, in fact. So a lot of volatility in the commodity price that we're having to pay particularly close attention to, but as always, we're focused on maximizing the returns. That is what we do at Peyto, generate profit, and we will continue to use that as our criteria for investing capital. If we can get that profit generated, then we will be putting that capital to work. We've got lots of opportunities to put it to work on, so we're pretty excited, chomping at the bit to get after those. So we'll talk to you next quarter.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.